It says there's four kinds of kids. One of them is smart, one of them is evil, one of them is naive, and finally one of them is one who doesn't know how to even ask questions. And let's see what the first one says today. Chacham HaOmer, what does the wise one say? What is the meaning of the law, statutes, and customs which the Lord our God has commanded us? This is a person that comes along and says, I surrender, I will fulfill every last tenet of the Seder night. But what's the reason? I want to enhance my observance, so what's the reason? Imagine if you light candles every Friday night, you don't know what they're there for. A week later, someone tells you, and you say, oh, that's a good idea. Now when you light the candles, you know what you're doing. You know it becomes substantial. So he's asking, what's the reason? Good question. What's the answer we should give him? What's the answer? And you shall explain to him all the laws of Passover to the very last detail about the Afikoman. The last Mishnah in Tractate Pesachim speaks about the fact that after we eat the Afikoman on the Seder night, you're not supposed to eat anything else for the duration of that evening. The taste of the Afikoman should stay in your mouth. So therefore, when this smart kid comes to shul and he wants answers, he doesn't just want to observe the Jewish law, he wants to know why. Don't say to him, well, you know the whole Torah, I ask questions. I know a woman that today is not religious, and she went to one of the more ultra-Orthodox schools, and I asked her, what happened? And she said, I asked a question once to my teacher, and my teacher answered me like this. When you know the whole Torah by heart, you can ask questions. Until then, keep your big mouth shut. That's not the answer, according to the Haggadah. You got to entertain their questions. And I'll tell you something else, and this is very important. The nation that asks inquiry questions will prevail. If our children do not ask questions, we will have no future. You have to actually provoke the questions. Be provocative. Say to them, why are we doing this?
You know why? Because provoking questions and thus asking them shows that you care. You don't ask about something you can care less about. But if you care about it, you ask. I always use that theory in shul. When someone says, Rabbi, why did you speak so short today? Why did you speak so long today? I know they're asking because they really care. Sometimes about getting to lunch late and sometimes about other things. But they are asking because they care. If someone comes up to you and says, why are you not wearing a coat? It is because they care about your well-being. If we don't ask questions about Judaism, if we don't bother the rabbis and the teachers with our most dearest questions about this religion, then we'll have no future, because no one will really care about anything within Judaism.
And the law is very simple with regard to the wise son. You have to teach him everything, from the beginning to end, to the last very law in Tractate Pesachim. And that law, of course, is that after you eat the Afikoman on the night of the Seder, you don't eat anything till the next dawn. Now we get to my favorite son, the weasel, the one that is called the wicked son, or in our language, the one that of course is the chutzpah. And what does this chutzpah son say? The wise son asks, what is the meaning of the rules, laws, and customs? Excuse me, that's the wise son, I'm sorry. The wicked son asks, what is the meaning of this service to you? Saying you, he excludes himself. And because he excludes himself from the group, he denies a basic principle. You may therefore tell him plainly, because of what the Eternal did for me when I came forth from Egypt, I do this for me and not for him. Had he been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. What do you say? Guys, what do you say about this guy? First of all, let's see his question and let's see the answer. Do you see a question? Does anybody see a question? And if you do, please explain to me what the question is. I will read it again. What is the meaning of this service to you? What is this guy asking?
I think he's being sarcastic.
I think he's being sarcastic, correct.
And I think he's excluding himself.
Definitely, the Haggadah says he's excluding himself because he says to you, even though he's Jewish, he has a bris just like you. Right?
And
it's like the guy who came to shul the other day tells me, I know you want my wife to sit behind the mechitza. I go, me? I'd love to sit together with your wife. What do you mean, me? Rather, I think Kerry is getting to the right point. He's not asking a question. He's issuing, continue, a statement. He's not asking anything. What is this Narish guy, this baloney you guys are doing? You're reclining, you're drinking wine, you're eating matzah, maror, karpas, all the tapestry of the Seder night. What do you think you're doing? Who do you think you're trying to fool? Right? And the answer is very simple. What do you think his answer is? You basically come out and say to him, hey, I'm not going to answer you. You already saying you and not me. I mean, you don't want to know. You're not part of it. So why should I answer you? And all I'll tell you is that had you been in Egypt, you wouldn't have been redeemed. You would have been one of those Jews that stayed behind in Egypt because they totally and utterly disconnected themselves from the Jewish nation. They have absolutely no relevance with the Jewish nation. They don't want to be known as Jews. They hide their Jewishness as best as possible. They go to the Christmas party, and God forbid, they do not insist on having a menorah up. They barely come to shul on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Maybe they'll sneak in for a yisker, and that's it. And that's the extent of their Jewishness. He's saying, what's this work for you? Imagine a fellow Jew coming up to you and saying, why do you guys light a menorah? That's basically this wicked son, right? In Hebrew, the word is amazing. Look what it says there in verse 18, on the line 18. Va'afatahak et shinav. In English, I don't see this translated. This could mean very simply, and you come up to him and beat him in his teeth. Give him a punch in the face.
Or, hakeh, we find in the Bible, means to sharpen. Amazing. What is the Haggadah's author telling us to do? He didn't even come with a question. He issued a statement. What should you do? Pretend he's asking a question and sharpen it. This is very much like when I was once in class and somebody asked a question that basically showed that he didn't understand one word that the teacher said from the beginning of the class. But the teacher, my Rosh Yeshiva, is such a tzaddik, such a righteous man. He looked at him and said, do you know what you're saying? This is amazing. You're assuming the Gemara over there and this interpretation with that one. And then he proceeded to answer the question that this questioner, this inquirer, had no idea they even existed. What was he doing? Instead of making him feel bad, he continued his thought. He used it as an impetus, as a trigger, as a hook to teach. And that's what I think the Haggadah is telling us. Sharpen his teeth. Use him to teach him. He came with his statements against Judaism. Fine. You go ahead and teach him. Pa'avur zeh asah Hashem li b'tzeiti mimitzrayim. Because of this God did to us when we left Egypt. Li velo lo. Ilu haya sham lo haya nigal. For me and not for you. Because if you were there, you wouldn't have been redeemed. Again, we can take that statement to mean, hey, he came to you screaming. You scream back at him. Punch him in the face and say, hey, if you were in Egypt, God would basically look at you and say, stay behind. Or if you take my second interpretation, perhaps it means something else. Perhaps this statement is there to teach us, if you were there, you wouldn't have been redeemed. Because your questions, your stand, is not sharp enough yet. Come, I'll help you sharpen it. So you can ask great, good, based, rooted questions. So what the Haggadah is telling us to do is to give him a little criticism, perhaps, or perhaps not. Use him to go ahead and teach. Use him and say to him, Ba'avur zeh, because of this, God took us out of Egypt. Because of your questions. But you're not there yet. And I'm going to help you get there together. So as you could see, this Russia, this weasel, this wicked son, with all his wickedness, actually took the time to write you an email and ask the question. Actually took the time to sit at the Seder and didn't go out that night to the country club or whatnot. That shows there's something there. Now it's your job to continue it. So the theme so far that we've spoken about is, A, you have to teach everyone. B, make sure that you encourage questions, because that shows that people care. And C, even if someone appears wicked and gives you cynical comments, use it. Use it to stimulate a conversation. Don't throw it away. Sharpen his teeth. Don't punch him in his mouth. Or perhaps maybe, yes, sometimes you have to punch him in the mouth and say, enough is enough. Sometimes there are illegitimate questions. That's what we've done so far.
Once again, we're on the third of the four sons in the Haggadah on page 11, and it says as follows. Tamma Omer, the simple son, according to the English translation of the Haggadah in front of me, but Tam in modern Hebrew means the naive one. One that's naim is Tam, or Tamim. However, in the Torah, where do we find this term Tam? Who's called Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim? Someone that's Tam that sits in the tents? As opposed to his brother?
Jacob,
excellent. There we are. Read the Torah every week. It pays off. Beautiful. Jacob, it says, Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. And that's against Esav, who was what? Esav was the Ish Yodeh Tzayid, Ish Tadeh. He was the one that knew how to hunt. He's the one that knew the fields. Right? He can barely sit down for 2 minutes to learn at breakfast. You understand? So maybe Tam is not so bad. Correct? And I'm going to try to even explain it better. What does he say? What's his breslin? Question? Mazot. What is this? Three words in English, two words in Hebrew. Mazot. What is this? He comes to the Seder table and he says, Vuzukst. What is this? What's happening? Right? Now, Amartei Rav, and you shall tell him, with the strong hand, the Eternal brought us out of Egypt from the house of bondage. Now I want to explain the four sons in a way that I didn't explain it yet, but I think it's a beautiful interpretation. This interpretation was given by the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, not the one that died, or according to some, he never died, the one before him that died in 1950. He said as follows, he says, the four sons are the four generations of North America. The first generation is the Chacham, the wise man. This is the father and the mother that came over from Europe. Long beards, Bekeshe. These are the ones that can ask these good questions. They're sitting at the Seder, they're inquisitive, they want to know. Then you have the Russia. They came to America, they had a sunny boy. The sunny boy wants to make money. He understands that if he doesn't work on Shabbos, he's not going to make money. He understands that if he doesn't work during the Seder, he may not make money. But his parents are bothering him, you got to come to the Seder. So he takes off from work, maybe his night job, and he comes to the Seder, and he's totally agitated. That while his buddies are making money, they're making overtime, he's sitting there eating matzah and maror and drinking Manischewitz grape juice. Right? He's bothered by it, so he's very upset. So what does he say? He says, what is this? What are you guys doing? It's not for me. I'm making money. My parents came over from Europe. They barely spoke a word of English. They couldn't get a job like I have. I speak a wonderful English. They have to get a job in some factory. As you know, most European Jews got jobs in factories. All you got to do is go like this and like this.
The Shmata factories.
All you got to do is do like this and like this. You don't have to talk to clients. You don't have to converse with anyone. So therefore, you didn't have to know English. You can know Yiddish or Polish or German and still survive, but not a good survival. A mediocre survival. The Russia, the son of this European Jew, he's making money. He's making it in the States. So he's very, very upset. He's saying, what are you guys doing? Not for me. What are you guys doing? You guys go to shul, I don't. You guys celebrate the Seder. What are you guys doing? I have to go to this Christmas party to make money. I'm going to start making my connections at the Christmas party. Okay? Then you got the Tom, the third son. The Tom, he's totally confused. On the one hand, he sees the Zayde. He sees the Bubba. He sees the grandmother and the grandfather. They're standing there. They're lighting Shabbos candles.
They're going to shul for Minyan. On the other hand, he sees Papa, who can't stand any minute being in Grandpa and Grandma's house. He's losing money. He wants to get back to his sports. He wants to get back to the office. He wants to get back to real life. And therefore, he's Tom. He just doesn't understand. He says, what's this? I'm seeing two worlds collide. Even these kinds of children are in our Hebrew school. Even these kinds of students are going to come to the Seders. And you have to know what to answer them. You have to know to say to them, with an outstretched arm, God took us out of Egypt from the hand of bondage. Namely, God took you out of Egypt even though you didn't understand what was happening. A night before you put blood on your doorpost and you ate matzah and maror and the Pesach sacrifice. The next day, without you even brushing your teeth, Paro said, get out. And it was confusing. And life is confusing when you see two opposite examples, like grandpa versus papa. But you have to go ahead and say, God took us out with an outstretched arm. There's one thing that doesn't change and is not confusing, and that is our ultimate belief in God. Start with that, and let's go slowly. Look at history, my dear son, my dear grandson. Look what we went through. The anti-Semitism, the pogroms, the crusades, the Khmelnytsky massacres, the Holocaust to top them all off. And to this very day, Jews are being blown up in the Holy Land. And yet, we're still here because of God's outstretched arm to the Jewish nation. While other nations that were on top of the world are in some junkyard somewhere today, we are still here to talk about it. And therefore, even that student has a place at the Seder, a place in the Hebrew school, and you got to know what to tell him. And finally, you got the one that doesn't even know how to ask. You know why? Because Bubba and Zeta are dead. Papa threw it all away. You're still alive, but now he's a grandpa. He married a grandma, an enlightened American woman or Canadian woman, and they have children. The Tom, who's all confused, who married a confused woman, assumed, presumably. And now they had a son, and his name is Shane Oyodel Lishol. He doesn't know how to ask. You know why? Because his link to religion is dead. All he has is one that's fighting against religion and one that's confused. So he doesn't even know what to ask anymore. At Petachlo, says the Haggadah, you open up for him. You drag him, enlighten him to come to Hebrew school and give him the means to even begin to ask questions and to get to the level of the first son we mentioned at the beginning of our words, the Chacham, the wise one. At Petachlo, you open up the gates for him. He doesn't know what to ask. He's too confused. He's detached. There's a beautiful article that was written by Chaim Soloveitchik, who's Rav Soloveitchik's son, called Rupture and Reconstruction. Chaim Soloveitchik inherited many things from his father, and one of them is his father's flowery English. Rupture and Reconstruction. You're talking about a ruptured son here. It's your job to reconstruct. And we dare not give up on any Jew, even if they meet the criteria of these sons, which each and every one are not necessarily convenient to teach. A wise son is, of course, a very challenging job for a teacher, and so is a wicked one. Obviously, having a Tom, a naive, a confused one, and a Shenoy Yodeh Lishon, one doesn't even ask questions, even harder. We dare not give up on either. Everyone, every single kid has a place. We have to find a place for him and make sure he gets a Jewish education. Obviously, not one class is suitable for everyone. You have to have different classes or different schools, whatever it takes to get these four kids a Jewish education.